Greetings. This is Dungeons and Devices, a podcast about role-playing games, computer games, technology, and various related topics. This is episode 6, Legends and Dragons, part 2. Welcome back to Dungeons and Devices. In this episode, we continue our talk around indie publishing. This episode contains part 2 of my talk with Petri Leinonen. Petri Leinonen is an independent RPG creator and publisher from Finland who has been for the past couple of years been heavily involved in the effort to bring Legendoja and Lohikäärmeitä, L&L, a Finnish adaptation of the world's most popular role-playing game to life, and is the first third-party publisher for L&L with his 2022 release Hirviökirja, a monster compendium for L&L. Check out episode 5 for the first part of this talk, in which we talked about Legendoja and Lohikäärmeitä, or Legends and Dragons, and how Petri got involved with that project. We also talked about his own ventures into indie RPG publishing. We will now continue our talk around the more technical aspects of indie RPG publishing and also dive into AI art generation. We, during our work, have been working with PDF documents, and it is not just the gaming industry that has these problems. PDFs were designed to mimic a print product so that the final result looks the same on the screen and on the paper. And this is very problematic when, in my work, we get into processing PDF documents for other reasons, not searching or something, but like for machine processing. And then there are just these issues that things that look to be near each other on the screen are actually like somehow completely messed up, and you can't select the text or read it in order as what you see on the screen.
One thing I did with Hirviökirja is that I actually went through the whole document page by page, paragraph by paragraph, and ordered it so that the document is in its document form is in order. And I had an actual accessibility audit done for it, so it is usable with a screen reader if you have a screen reader that can understand PDFs, which is not really that many.
Since this podcast also talks about technology things, do you mind sharing some background information about what goes into doing the layout of such a book, be it this Hirviökirja or the L&L book?
Yeah.
Obviously, you have a background in graphics, but could anybody easily learn it today? Are there good tools to do it?
There are good tools. I don't really know what the really cheap versions are. I am using InDesign as my go-to, and everyone who understand anything about anything will now think I'm a complete hack, but I love InCopy, which is basically a file format or editing tool that allows the editors to just focus on the text and the layout to exist separately from the text. So I have different files for the actual game text and then the layout, and I'll combine them in layout instead of like what many people do, where they do even the writing in layout. Layout where you just type in your layout program and are happy with that. I tend to do it with two different programs. It's not rocket science to say, like I'm belittling me, but making a book is in layout and in graphic design is following a lot of rules and making a lot of rules, just staying consistent with how you want to present something and thinking in terms of three structures, like you have a headline that describes the chapter, and then there is a headline that describes one thing and another headline that describes a part of that one thing, and then there is another thing and a thing that goes under that, and just making sure that the document flows through this logical semantic structure. And after you have that, you apply styles and make sure that each page has the relevant data. Of course, there's a lot of art to it as well, but the science that makes the art possible is something that you can really learn by going through videos or instructional articles about what a document structure is. If you have that, you have a lot.
So basically, anyone shouldn't be discouraged today to get into this if they are interested in bringing their ideas to other players and GMs.
No. They really shouldn't be discouraged. If you have a good idea, just use your Word or whatever and press print and print as PDF. And you have a PDF document and your idea is on that. And you can put it on Itch, which is a sales place for PDF games and computer games. And you can put it out there. You can make it free, or if you want, pay what you want. And people can now get your idea, and maybe someone gets excited about it at the level that they want to be a layout person for you. Make it better. Make it more usable. But I think one thing that many RPG creators fall into a trap of is that they have to do everything and they have to be good at everything. I know I've fallen into that trap, and it meant that I wasn't publishing anything for a good 25 years of creating stuff, because I was like, this isn't as good as everyone else's. And it was a few years ago, I think 2019 or 2018, when we published a game called The Quick. Myrosmi had published it. I was one of three designers on it. It was the first collaboration I ever did. And at that point, I realized I don't have to be able to do everything. I didn't do layout for that. I did game design. There was a person who wrote the prose, and there was a person who was responsible for the world. And it was a game changer for me. Like, you don't have to be good at everything. If you have a good idea, if you have, like, if you can draw, if you have ideas, put them down, make them as good as you can, just get them out there. If you write, you'll meet people who are excited about another specific area and want to help you, or want to collaborate with you, or want you to help them. And that's really like how you can get stuff done, instead of just being there all alone and thinking your game isn't good enough because you haven't had the perfect layout, or you haven't had exact writing or the perfect pictures.
I recognize much things that apply to me as well. One particular aspect is, which always feels that it's holding me back, is that when you publish something, especially something related to role-playing games, you might need to have pictures. I am very bad at creating pictures and I cannot really draw anything. I have tried many times, but it just doesn't work. So I was at least excited when I heard that you did the pictures for the monster book, Hirviö Kirja, using AI.
Yeah, for some context, this was in 22, so it's 2 years ago, and Midjourney was in the early, I think, version 2 at that point. We're now at what, version 6 or something ridiculous, I don't know. But Midjourney was something new, something interesting, something exciting. I think everyone at this point have heard how that there's some moral and ethical questions there. But at that point, it was just people were experimenting with it. And it was rubbish. It was like, if you look at Midjourney art now, it's really hard to say if it is AI generated or not in some circumstances. But back then it was rubbish. And for me, it was something to play around with. The fact that it was rubbish was really a part of it. I actually said when the book came out, Midjourney version 3, I think, just released. I was like, okay, if this had been the case when I started, I wouldn't have done this because it looked too polished and it looked too good. For me, Midjourney was something to get me inspired. As said, I have like graphic design background, that sort of background, so visual arts as well as computers. So Midjourney was very interesting for me. Before Hirviökirja, I had published a book using Creative Commons Zero sources, basically like or MIT licensed sources, which allow any sort of use, and taking bits and pieces from those, like usually old artwork, and combining them into something new and different. And for me, Hirviökirja was a lot like that. I toyed around with the AI prompts for, I think it was 2,500 different prompts or something for the total of the book. And it has something like around 60 pictures in it, and 2,015 prompts or variations of those. And took what inspired me, clipped it, edited it, drew over it, just like using it like you would take a magazine, cut out pieces and mix them together until you have something that you like. All the tools available with AI art these days would create, I think, a science fiction world using Standard Diffusion and other tools that are available these days, the works. I don't even know what they use these days. I could see that being really interesting, but there's the moral questions. The training data would have to be different from what it is now. Even when I was publishing Hirviökirja, there was the discussion that what's going on here. For me, it was a question of I was using it as raw material, not really. Like, yes, there are pictures that are more from the original, but I know that there isn't a single image that isn't somehow edited in the book. Like I don't have a single AI image that I could use as is in the book.
I can share how I use AI art, and I have been really much enjoying creating all kinds of stuff, and it's exactly because I cannot draw myself.
Yep.
I can make up stories and I can make up adventures and maybe game ideas and a lot of stuff, but I cannot visually express it. And it has been a very good feeling that I now finally can. I actually can produce images that sort of look like what maybe I have imagined. But of course, I understand that it's not as controllable as an artist who I can say, draw this, and then he draws this. AI art is much more random and you cannot reproduce it, or it's difficult to reproduce the same character. So I don't think it's viable for maybe big commercial projects, but I could very much see myself illustrating my adventure with some images, because my hand drawing would not be as good as what comes out of it.
Yeah, I really love, and this is like, I hate AI art, but I love using it for my personal gaming table. If I want to illustrate something, having a picture of a person before AI art, I had a folder of pictures of celebrities or people that were my NPCs, non-player characters, and I showed those to my players. Nowadays, I actually use this person doesn't exist a lot, which is basically AI art creating people who don't exist. With sci-fi, I could really see, like, if I wanted to show a space station or spaceship, I could create the prompt that makes a close enough approximation for the players to have a visual aid for the game. I don't see it revolutionizing big market publishing. On the other end of the spectrum, I frankly think that indie game publishing is too artist-driven to allow real successes there either with AI art, because a lot of the creators are artists as well. And using AI art if you have used or seen AI art, you can see that that's AI art and it will throw you off and it's annoying. And you start thinking if this was ethically done or like what's the consequence of using that? Or why didn't you just ask someone to draw for you when you publish something? As a side note, the two adventures I've published since Hirviökirja, the first one used art drawn by me and my dad, and the one that I'm publishing now, that's coming out soon, has art drawn by a wonderful Finnish artist, Juno Viinikka, who also drew some stuff for the LNL core books. Now that I've gone through my AI phase, I've moved back to using pencils and digital drawing tools like Photoshop.
I could see that if I would do a commercial project, AI art could be used for my planning phase. Sort of, I could make pictures and play around with the prompts and make like a setting that I want to be in the final product, but it would be more like something I would give an artist, that this is like my thoughts of what I would want, but and then give the details that I want changed or how I actually want it, which is not possible with AI today, at least.
Yeah, I would like to differ from that, because I've followed one AI artist, like, and I, in this case, I'm using artist because he is like very dedicated to actually using tools to create very specific style of pictures with AI prompt generators. And when you start getting to the point where you create 3D characters to create poses for your AI prompts, I think that's the point where it starts moving towards art. But I'm not there, and I don't think the world is quite ready for that sort of artistry to be recognized. Even if when I'm looking at those pictures, I know that the amount of work that goes into getting one of those pictures done is insane. I think that the ethical question of this is ripping off artists is still weighing so much in the scales of things that we're not there yet. But with good source data, ethically sourced language model or picture model, I think at some point we can be at a point where we can truly appreciate what some people are doing with it. And recognize the fact that a lot of people who are using AI art generators are just spewing out sewage, because they're coming up with a very short prompt and then clicking a button and they have something that looks like an AI art thing.
I know that many publishers, like RPG publishers, which we are discussing, disallow AI work. They disallow AI work even in their like more community or indie programs, like Chaosium's have this, I don't remember the exact name, it's Miskatonic.
Miskatonic something or another. Yeah, they disallow it, and a lot of the big publishers, I think this is partly because a lot of the publishers have strong relationships with artists, and they recognize that the current issues with AI art are hurting the artists that they have worked so closely with for so long. So I think that's a very valid choice of just saying no. You can, if you want to use art, then go to the Smithsonian archives and get something for free. I really recommend the Smithsonian archives, because there's thousands and thousands of pictures that you can use commercially if you just want, and you don't have to prompt an AI. You just use a search query about witches and you get tons of wood carvings of 16th century or whatever, and you can use that really well. But yeah, I see that the big publishers are doing that, because that's how things are now. The AI art isn't something that is commercially feasible. If you would say that you create a product, a big product that is done with AI art. You are just inviting a lot of criticism, and it will bleed out to other products you've made. And you, in the current climate of things, you lose money. And with big publishers, it comes down to money. So it's better to say no. And I think that's the correct decision at the moment.
Yes, I think it's more to protect themselves from any problems in the future, because the situation with AI art is what it is. So that many people claim it's cannibalizing other people's work.
Indeed.
There is not a final word on how this will go out, but I do hope that maybe someday AI generation could become like part of the tools that an artist can use and not frowned upon, because I see a lot of possibilities. For example, if an artist would be very good at painting or drawing characters, but is not so good doing backgrounds, then it could be like a combination of AI and real work could really make something special. But until we have all these problems, this is not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't see it being, it's inevitable that we are going to see AI art as part of the tool set in the future. I think Adobe has really taken steps towards that, not just in Photoshop, where they have the, I don't remember the name of that plugin or whatever, but you can fill things with AI generated content at the moment if you want to, but also things like video editing Premiere Pro. There is currently in the beta, at least, you can click on enhance sound and it will use their audio data to get rid of noise and echoes and such. It's still in the baby shoes, but these tools that help you with the day-to-day processes of your workflow are probably things that will become part of everyday work sooner than later.
All right, we went quite far away from publishing yeah. RPG books, and I think we also have to wrap up things.
Yep.
I would like to thank you for joining me today. And it was a very, very interesting conversation, touching on many subjects that I myself are either involved in or very interested in.
Yeah, thank you. It was nice to get to be here and ramble. I tend to go like in different directions when I get prompted. I'm a bit like an AI in that way. So give me a prompt and I'll spew out something. But yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
This concludes my interview with Petri. We will stay with role-playing games for one more episode. In the next episode of Dungeons & Devices, we will dive into creating RPG adventures that are time-limited. This usually means a game that is for some sort of convention or public gaming, or maybe a one-off or introductory game. The structuring and timing is very important in these kinds of games. Episode 7 will be out on the 30th of May. You have been listening to episode 6 of Dungeons & Devices, a podcast about role-playing games, computer games, technology, gadgets, and gaming. I am your host, Leonard. Music is Boss Battle by Celestial Aeon Project and Everrune. Dungeons & Devices releases new episodes every second Thursday. You can find this podcast in most podcasting apps, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, or Amazon Music. If you would like to subscribe, go to dungeonsanddevices.com, where you can also join in on the discussions, or email us, podcast@dungeonsanddevices.com. Farewell until our next quest together.